Jim Taylor back on WRMJ and WRMJ.com, visiting with Sam Knox with the IHSA, the administrator in charge of football. And my goodness, what a day on this Tuesday, December the 18th, with the results announced of IHSA district scheduling. It passes, I think, by 17 votes. Your initial reaction just a couple of hours later, Sam Knox.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jim. And people have been asking me over the last couple of weeks what I thought was going to happen, and I just simply said I think it's going to be a close vote. And a lot of us in the IHSA office had that same feeling. I didn't really know where it was going to land either way, but it turned out it was a really close vote and was supported by our member school. You know, 17 votes was about as close as you can get.
Yeah, and I think the voter participation, each member school, 800-some-odd schools, get one vote through their official representative, and I think, what was it, 85% was the voter turnout. So I think a lot of the vote was motivated by this issue on the ballot. I think 24 or 25-some-odd proposals that schools got to vote on through the legislative process.
Yeah, the football proposal certainly created a lot of interest, a lot of buzz around the whole bylaw amendment proposal process, and maybe it's a good way to get principals and ADs more involved and taking more of a look at how things will affect them locally. And I heard from even a handful of superintendents who called me over the last couple of weeks and said, hey, I'm a superintendent. I'm not the person who votes, but we're talking about these things at the board level, and can you give me some information about the football proposal? So it's probably good that more people get involved and be more knowledgeable about the whole process, whether it's a football proposal or whether it's a transfer eligibility proposal or anything else that was on the ballot.
Well, and it's interesting. I know basically the motivation for districts is setting up the districts basically on two issues. You're talking about enrollment and geography, which sounds very reasonable. But the issue for this part of the state now, it doesn't go into effect until 2021. And I know for this portion of the state, I'm talking to you from Aledo in Western Illinois, how fluid this process is still going to be over the next 2 years when you try to set up these districts. Well, because, you know, how many schools are contemplating this 8-man football issue, which is going to impact how districts look like? Because the main question today is, you know, after the release from the IHSA is, well, what do the districts look like? And I mean, there's so much the fluidness, I guess, of this issue, I think, looms pretty large for this part of the state.
It certainly does, and it was a wise move by the Football Advisory Committee to. It was after the fact, no doubt, but when we went through the town hall meeting process back in November, a lot of folks asked, well, when will this be implemented? Could we do this as soon as next year? And realistically, we could have, but it would have been very challenging. But I think putting it into play in 2021, like you said, will give a lot of smaller schools the chance to really examine what they want to do with their football program. Do we want to stay as a co-op and stay as a healthy 11-man program? Do we want to shift gears and play 8-man football? If we're a co-op of two schools that we both used to have our own football program, do we want to break up the co-op and each of us play a separate 8-man schedule because we've got, you know, 17, 18 kids that want to play for our school? I can see a lot of those things happening. So to give schools a couple-year lead time on making those important decisions is good for the entire process, I think.
Yeah, and I know when we talked about this process, you know, after the IHSA Football Advisory Committee, you know, announced that they were moving forward with this and getting this to the legislative ballot. And I know I've asked you this question before, and I think I've asked Greg Anderson and Matt Troha and whoever else with the IHSA. The question always is, can the IHSA schedule basically all the high school football games in the state of Illinois? And the answer is what?
We can, and if you think about it, we really do this. We have software in place, and it allows us to do this already for postseason volleyball, postseason basketball, postseason softball, track and field. It's simply looking at a map and grouping schools together by, again, enrollment and geography. And this process probably won't be much different than putting together the postseason brackets for all those sports I mentioned. But this will be the first time in IHSA history that we're doing this for a regular season in one of our sports. So there will be, like anything new, there will be some unforeseen challenges. There will be some certain twists and turns that we can't even anticipate right now. But you know, we'll go down this road and see where it leads us. I think there are going to be a lot of schools who are relieved. You know, the schools that have to hunt far and wide to find those non-conference games now, they're going to be relieved that this is in place. There's going to be some other schools in really solid conferences that have been together for a long, long time who, you know, at first glance, they're not going to like it very much. And you can tell by the vote. It was almost split right down the middle. So we're going to have a lot of schools that like it, a lot of schools that maybe don't like it. But we'll work together with those schools and do the best we can for our students and our schools in the state.
But even the critics of the plan that you look at from purely a football standpoint, the one thing that they have to like is they know what class they are going into a season, right? So I think that's important. And I think the other thing that's important is these districts are basically going to be examined and evaluated every 2 years. And that's where, you know, the organization is able to fine-tune this, and basically it's a work in progress, that these things can be maneuvered, you know, basically over a two-year stretch.
Right. I think you're exactly right, Jim. When schools are going to like the fact that they know they're a 2A school, they're a 3A school, et cetera, from day one of a two-year cycle. So just last week, of course, we put out we posted our classification and enrollment stuff going forward for the next 2 years, where every school is locked into their class for 2 years, no matter who wins a state championship, no matter who wins a regional, everybody's locked in for 2 years. And then, you know, a couple years down the road when we implement the football district model, that'll be the same way. So schools will be locked in for 2 years, and then after that 2 years, we'll evaluate, you know, maybe a certain school co-ops with somebody. Maybe a certain school is moved up a class because of success they've had at the state finals. And all those movings and changings could change a lot of placement in districts. So it's going to be fluid. It's going to be, like you said, a work in progress. And, you know, people have to be patient. We'll get it figured out like we always do. And is it going to be perfect for every school? No. But I don't think any model we have out there for any sport is perfect for every school, because we have such a diverse state. Small schools, large schools, city schools, country schools, geography, et cetera. No model is perfect, but we'll try this one with football and do the best we can with it.
All right. And then the other component is basically you're looking at, if I understand it correctly, you get basically the seven district games that determine your playoff status, and then the two out-of-district games. The main criticism I hear is, you know, they call them exhibition games or whatever. They don't mean anything. But then, but it gives the school, the individual team, then the flexibility, though, to schedule a team if they're concerned about rivalry-wise, to say if we want to maintain this rivalry, we can maintain that if we so desire. But the criticism is, well, you're playing two games that don't matter. So your response, I guess, to that.
Yeah, we've heard the same thing, and mainly from a lot of coaches. And I've been a football coach myself. I totally understand their perspective on that. And we will never say that they're exhibition games or glorified scrimmages. We're simply saying what it is. Those games don't factor into playoff qualification. So schools can take those and run with them. If they want to call them exhibitions, scrimmages, whatever, that's up to them. But they will have the freedom, the liberty to schedule whoever they want. So if, for example, in my old area of the state, Quincy, Notre Dame, they're not going to be in the same district, two different size schools. But if they want to continue playing one another in week one or two, they certainly can. In your area of the state, maybe that holds true with Alleman and Rock Island. They're both in the same town. Makes sense to play each other. Big crowd, big gate. They likely won't be in the same class because of enrollment. But if they want to keep that game going, they certainly can. But yeah, I don't know. As a coach, you can look at it one or two ways. You can say, yeah, this is just a, you know, a practice game. It doesn't mean anything. But I don't know any coach, when he gets out there on the field on Friday night, isn't going to try to win a football game. And to me, if it's early in the season and you've got some questions about, well, who's going to be my starting tight end? who's going to be my outside linebacker, who's going to be my punter, who's going to be my center. You've got a little bit of chance there to let kids play in those games and see what they can show you on a varsity game, because if you've got question marks about it now with the way, I mean, week one, it's, you got to put your best 11 on the field and go, and the backups might not get a shot because you've got to win that game from week one. So to me, there's some coaching there too, where you can let kids play a little bit more and maybe figure out who can be a varsity player and who can't.
All right. And then how soon do you think it will be before you have the boilerplate on the districts? I mean, do you have a timeline that you hope by, you know, the fall, so it takes effect 2021, so do you hope to have something in place by, like, the something concrete by the fall of 2020, or what is the official release, you think, for that?
Yeah, good question, and that's going to be a common question over the next several months, I'm sure. But really, the way we're going forward now with the two-year classification model, we have to wait for the next 2 years to play out to see where schools are going to land in their classes. You know, those non-boundary schools especially, how much playoff success have they had? Have they won state trophies? Are they going to move up? Are they going to be multiplied? Are they going to have the multiplier waiver? A lot of those pieces are unknown right now because we have to let the next 2 years happen before we can determine that. So I know people will want to know probably today or tomorrow, what district are we going to be in? But it's so early in the process. And again, those components of the eight-man option and co-op options, and we've got to let all the dust settle a little bit on that before we determine. But really, my gut tells me we have to wait until 2 years from now, December of 2020, to see how football teams do over the next 2 years before we release our classifications. Now, people might say, oh, my gosh, December of 2020, and it's going to go into effect in the fall of 2021. But you got to remember, every school is going to be in the same boat.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, their schedules are going to be erased, and everybody's starting at the same starting line. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm sure there are schools, like I referenced before, who know, hey, our neighbor and us, we're not going to be in the same class because of enrollment. So they're probably making some phone calls today. Hey, we're not in the same class, but let's go ahead and keep playing our game as a non-district game. Those conversations can happen. And if you want to lock in your non-district games, you can certainly do that. But people probably won't know their districts until a couple of years from now.
Yeah, and then as far as just a couple more questions here with Sam Knox with the IHSA, as far as the non-district games, now are those going to be uniform on the schedule, or it's week so-and-so and week so-and-so, so it's basically the same? I would call them open dates for the non-district games.
That's the original plan, and there's still some of those details that we have to iron out with our football advisory committee and our staff at the IHSA office and with our board of directors to figure out how all that puzzle is going to be put together. But that was the initial thought by the football advisory. If everybody is open weeks one and two, well, then there's no reason not to find a game somewhere. Does that make sense?
Yep.
You know, if everybody's open, then a lot of people have a chance to go play people that they want to play out of their districts. So that's the challenge now, as you know, is that trying to find that non-conference game in whatever week it might be, whether it's week one or week, you know, I've talked to some ADs recently who say, yeah, I'm looking for a week two game next year. I'm looking for a week four game next year. And they're worried that they're not going to be able to find anybody. One guy told me, hey, I've got a team on the line who said they'll play us. They're from Ohio. I don't want to go to Ohio to play a high school football game. So with the district model, everybody's going to be starting from scratch, basically. And you know, the schedule building, it'll happen. ADs will do a great job, as they always do, building their schedules and helping their football teams have a great experience.
Yeah, and as we speak, and I know Scott Johnson would appreciate this comment, we're talking about small school lore in Illinois. You're not talking about Ohio, Illinois. You're talking about the state of Ohio. But anyway, I had a referee call me today, and you would appreciate this question, I think. And he said, well, how then do you think the officiating assignments are going to be set up? Because a lot of it's dealt with now with the conference assigner. So would that be a situation where basically the districts would have basically then an officiating assigner for these crews?
That's my initial thought, is that the district or some one of the athletic directors in that group of schools will take the lead on working with a local official or assigning, you know, some athletic directors still hire their own officials. Maybe somebody takes the lead on that and says, hey, I'm the AD at XYZ high school, I'll go ahead and hire the officials for all of our games. And that's going to be a challenge, too, because, like I said, everybody's starting from scratch, and officials really won't have, they won't have games on their schedule until we know who's going to be in what districts and what those schedules might look like. Now, if Rock Ridge High School already has a crew hired for a week five game, and they just don't know who they're going to play, well, and it works out where they have a home game, they'll probably just keep that officiating crew. But that'll be some challenges, too, that will iron themselves out as we go. Somebody asked me recently, well, is the IHSA going to assign all the officials for those games? And the answer to that is no. And we'll let the schools hire their own officials just like they do now.
All right. And then this is a perfect segue as we wrap up. I saw somebody tweet out recently or social media or saw a story linked that you're actually out officiating basketball games. You have an officials license, which I think is a pretty cool story. So you get a firsthand view of, hey, what it's like out here in the field, on the court, whatever. So a little bit about your experience there and why you think that's important.
Jim, I absolutely love officiating. I it's crazy to say that, and some people might think I'm wacko, but I love it. To me, it's a stress reliever. You get out there, you're doing your best, you're focused on the game, and people can holler at you and bark at you and say things. That stuff does not bother me. It's so fun. We had some stressful times in the office right around state finals times, and people said, Sam, what are you going to do to relieve stress tonight? I said, I'm going to referee some basketball. And they looked at me like I was crazy, but it's true. It's fun to stay involved in that regard. And, I've been an official for over 20 years in basketball and baseball, and I enjoy it. It's a fun way to stay involved and connected with high school sports. And I don't go crazy and have, 50 games or anything like that, but, on nights I'm open, I've told athletic directors and assigners, hey, I'll do anything you need. Freshman girls, freshman boys, JV, varsity, tournament time. I'll help you out if you need an official. And some of the assigners have cooperated so far and have offered me some games. And it's just a fun way to stay connected. I know that in some ways, the spotlight's going to be on that IHSA guy who's supposed to know the rules. And am I going to make mistakes? You bet I am. But am I going to try hard to get every call right? You bet I am. Just like the kids try to make every basket and the coaches try to call a good game from the coach's box. So it's just, I enjoy it. I can't think of a better atmosphere on a Friday night to be in a gym full of people cheering for their teams and the excitement involved with that. And it's a great way to be involved in high school sports.
But it gives you a perspective. I mean, that's important for professional development within your job in the IHSA, I think. I mean, that's a perfect, that dovetails nicely with your job, I would think. I mean, that's kind of like a professional development component, in my opinion.
Well, yeah, it's a great chance to get out and be among our member schools and talk to athletic directors and coaches. And I'll be honest, there will be some coaches who don't know what I do for a living, and they don't care. I'm just the guy in the striped shirt, and I'm just there to do my role as a part of the basketball game. I'm okay with that. So officials want to be as anonymous as possible. And I've said this for many years. If you go into a gym and do your role as an official and you leave the court and nobody remembers who you were, then you've done a really good job that night. So that's what I try to do, like many officials. And, we have great conversations in the dressing room before the game and after the game about certain calls and plays and what you see on this, what you see on that. But I think it just shows our officials that I'm as invested in this as they are. And, I want to be there to help them provide expertise and experience and knowledge and maybe some suggestions on how to get better. But it's just, again, a really fun way to stay involved in high school sports.
All right. So Sam Knox will blink his eyes two times. It'll be 2021 in district scheduling. We'll be out in full effect in the IHSA. I've taken enough of your time, sir, but always appreciate it. And thanks for the observations today.
Yeah, thanks, Jim, and thanks for all the coverage you provide in your area and the positive way you highlight our schools and our kids. And I hope you all have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Right, Sam Knox with the IHSA joining us on WRMJ.